This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. We saw Ruby and Edie spend a night at the house where Janice was house-sitting. Janice wasted no time in flirting with Ruby. Janice's innocent girl talk leads Ruby to recall unwanted memories.
Janice flopped herself down in breathless giggles. Oh, do come and dance. I'll put something else on. Why don't you take over and be the man? I'm sure you're better at leading than me.
I'm not sure about that, said Ruby, crossing her legs to show she wasn't getting up.
I'm having an almost indecent amount of fun. I don't feel like an old maid at all.
You're more like a perennial maiden.
What a sweet thing to say. Perennial, like a plant that keeps coming up. Or do you mean like a dandelion? Janice laughed.
I was thinking of a real flower. A forget-me-not.
Oh, that is me. That's the nicest thing.
Janice began opening cupboard doors. I wonder if the Edwardses have got any booze.
Booze? Janice, don't.
Ruby was surprised at Janice's abandon. If you want anything, we can pitch in and do some shopping another time. But there's Edie.
Oh, I suppose you're right.
Janice shut the last cupboard and squeezed up next to Ruby on the sofa. Ruby didn't budge. The cushiony roundness of Janice's hip was hot against her.
More stories, then, said Janice.
Go on. Tell me about Edie's father. Army, Navy, or Air Force?
Army. You're such a nosy Parker, Janice.
I know,
she giggled coyly. But don't you just love hearing people's stories?
You must have a story, said Ruby.
I haven't. I think that's why I want to hear other people's. I don't have anything of my own. So go on. What was his name?
Janice pawed Ruby's arm.
Stan.
It made her sick to say it.
What was he like?
Tall. Heavy.
Honestly, Janice groaned. How vague can you get?
You should be on one of those radio shows where people have to guess what's being said.
Well, you know, sometimes. Oh, of course. You don't really know them, do you? A lot of people got themselves bowled over in the war years.
There's Beryl and her Jim.
Him going missing was the best thing. He was a cad. Then I was bowled over when I met my fiancé, and look what happened there. Mind you, I don't think I liked him much, but the point is, being bowled over has a lot to answer for.
Yes, said Ruby.
Sometimes I wonder, said Janice, whether Beryl's Jim really is still missing. I mean, would anybody know if he simply ran off?
That'd be a story.
Well, you're lucky you've got Edie.
She's a good little thing, isn't she? And pretty.
Must have been a gorgeous baby.
You've got a photo somewhere, I suppose?
Not really.
What a funny fish you are.
Would you mind if I had a bath? Ruby said, to get away from more questions.
Wonderful idea, Janice said, springing up. I'll turn it on. There are bath salts and bubble bath stuff here, and I know we can use them.
Are you sure?
People give those gift boxes to Mrs. Edwards, and she never uses them because of dermatitis. She said I can use as many as I like. Rose? Gardenia? Lavender? I think there's some lily of the valley.
Thanks. Can't remember when I last had a soak on my own.
Oh.
Janice's tone dropped.
Gardenia-scented steam filled the bathroom. Ruby lowered herself into the hot foam of bubbles. The bathroom was all hers, for as long as she was in it. No housemates or strangers to knock on the door demanding she hurry up. She didn't have to lock it. How long had it been since she had a deep, hot bath? The temperature was perfect. The towel Janice had given her matched the painted walls. The hand towel next to the basin matched too. If she ever got her own place, she'd have nice things like this. Out in the living room, Janice was going through one record after another, lifting the needle off those she didn't like and trying another. Raucous swing, big band dance music from a time of frenzied gaiety. Glenn Miller, Tommy Dorsey, Jack Hilton, one of those. The tune didn't matter. Janice turned up the volume. Ruby hoped it didn't wake Edie. Janice thumped about, dancing. Ruby slid further down into the embracing hot water, letting it reach her ears. The music unsettled her. She wet the blue flannel and covered her face. Outside the St. Oswald Social Hall, the American's trumpet and trombone had shot the darkness to pieces. She was never sure what happened next. Men's voices. Local voices, rough and jagged, savage grunting. Fists, teeth, arms flailing. A shriek. Hers? Someone behind her, grabbing her, dragging her backwards into the darkness. The glimpse of Lenny picking himself up from the ground, his face spurting blood, his figure dissolving into the light of the doorway. The scream did not come out of her throat. Her shoe came off as she kicked, struggling to get purchase with her heels in the ground. A voice.
Leave her alone, Stan!
Ruby wished Janice would choose something else. Even Gilbert and Sullivan would do. She poured a handful of water onto the flannel over her mouth and tried to think about what it might be like to drown in a bath. It would be pleasant to let go. Drift into a silent, liquid void. The memory had woken up and wouldn't let her go. When he'd thrown her to the ground, something cracked. A branch? A bone? He was on her, the bulk of him crushing her. Pain slamming over her, into her. Her arms seemed twisted. The band, the din from the hall disappeared. Her skirt was on her face. His forearm pressing the fabric of the skirt into her mouth. The panicked voice of another man snapped in her head.
Christ, Stan, what have you done?
She whipped the flannel off her face and gasped a deep breath. The music from the other room still came at her. Glare from the ceiling made her blink. Water sloshed over the side of the bath when she sat up to get the little scrubbing brush, and she fiercely scoured her heat-reddened shoulders and the centre of her chest, pressing the brush into her sternum. The weight and pain of him when he scraped and ground into her had pushed her out of the blankness she'd fallen into. Stones and bits of branch and leaves and the hard ground had all parted under her. She felt her body being pounded, driven like a stake into the dirt. The sky through the lace silhouette of the tree above her made her think how wild her mother would be if her new white cardigan was ruined. Somewhere, someone blew a whistle. Running feet crunched gravel.
Redcaps! Come on!
Then he was off her, hoisting up his trousers.
Good girl, he said.
The bastard!
Good girl. He'd said that. Good girl. In the bath, in the clean bathroom with the blue towels on the chrome rails, Ruby opened her eyes and let herself see it now. He had buckled the belt without even doing up the button of his flies and fled. She was alone, feeling as though a steamroller had run over her. When she tried to sit up, pain galvanized her, and her arm wouldn't work. She would never be sure if it was Lenny What's-His-Name she saw in the light of the doorway, blood on his uniform jacket, talking to one of the American MPs and pointing into the scrubby border. A couple of red-capped RNZ MPs raced past her. What remained of her seeped into the ground along with the slime he'd left on her. Where had her panties gone? And she'd better find her shoe. The music out in the living room had changed to something quieter and smoother. There was a light tapping on the bathroom door and Janice appeared. "I've brought in an extra towel," she said. "I love the luxurious feeling of using two good towels. Don't you? It makes me feel like a film star. They've got a cupboard full. Might as well use them, don't you think?" It was going to be hard to leave. The following morning, Janice begged Ruby to return to the Edwards place. "Why don't you stay? Oh, please say you will. I've already given Mrs. T this week's board. We should put in an appearance," Ruby said. Both Janice and Edie looked at her like lost puppies. "We could come later in the week, perhaps Thursday."
"Promise, Mum?" said Edie.
"It depends if you behave yourself," Ruby said.
I will," said Edie.
After work, back at Arcadia, Ruby was glad when Douglas said he'd be gone for a day or two. She wanted to distance herself from him as well as Janice. The night she had spent with Janice had been bittersweet. Ruby needed time to shake off the fractured disquiet of unwanted memories that had come to the surface. And there were decisions ahead of her. She needed to have her thoughts to herself. At Vado, she worked on a new order of cocktail headwear and looked after the salon while Madam ran her errands. "Janice," said Ruby, over a cup of tea, "I've got to decide on a school."
"School?"
whined Edie.
"I haven't even had a proper holiday."
"Don't forget," said Ruby, "you had a week off while everyone else was still going to school."
"But still..."
"Shh," Ruby and Janice chorused. Madam turned the handle of the coffee mill as she waited for Ruby to speak. Ruby gulped and took a breath. "Madam, I'll have to come in late on Monday if I may. Term starts and I have to enroll Edie."
"School? Of course. Monday. Before morning tea time, you will be back here. At work."
"Thank you, madam." Ruby smiled and turned.
"So Edith will walk home from school," madam said.
Ruby's smile dropped. "Home."
"Home? No, I thought she'd..."
"You thought your daughter could continue coming here at the end of the day?"
"I..."
"That is not suitable. She can go home by herself."
"Please." The word caught in the back of Ruby's throat. Madam's mouth tightened.
"It'll only be for an hour and a half," Ruby said, her voice small.
"Your affairs are for you to manage."
Madam gave a hard look.
"A new arrangement is required. You are doing a little special work for me, and I should pay you a little more. But I shall not. Next week you can finish the day earlier to attend to your child."
"But..."
Ruby saw a pile of complications.
"I..."
Madam flicked Ruby's unspoken objections away with her fingers.
Ruby couldn't say it. Edie would not be walking back to a boarding house where no one could be trusted to keep her safe. "There are a few difficulties," she started. Madam's jet eyes blazed.
"Difficulties? What do you know of difficulties?"
Ruby took the stairs slowly, trying to resist the temptation to stomp like a rebellious child. Janice tiptoed out of the blocking room.
"What did she say?"
"Nothing much," said Ruby, flatly. "I'll have to make up the time."
"I say," Janice whispered. "When the headmaster asks your address, you'd better give them my place in Cook Street. No one'll care. And anyway, you'll have a new address before the school wants to send a letter home."
Edie looked up from her book.
"I don't mean to be awful," Janice whispered, tilting her head toward Edie. "But it wouldn't do her any good if you told the headmaster you're living at that place."
Janice was probably right.
With Douglas away, conversation with the Arcadia residents had palled. Ruby sat with Edie, reading or listening to radio shows in the warm lounge, until she couldn't stand it. Douglas's appearance on Wednesday night lifted her spirits. He paused at the entrance to the dining room, sniffed the air, and politely coughed into his fist when he saw the plate of food Pim handed him.
"Mr. Woods!" cried Edie. "You're back!"
"So it seems," he said.
Edie patted the chair next to hers.
"You're sitting with us, aren't you?"
"Do," said Ruby. "Please." They looked at the grey, lumpy mush on their plates. Whatever it was had been cooked beyond identification, with bits of green, slimy stuff through it. And there was something bitter in it, too. Douglas leaned forward.
"Have you given it any thought?"
Ruby's teeth crunched something gritty. She didn't want to think what that could be.
"Pardon?"
Ruby said, giving Edie a warning jab with her elbow to stop Edie from following Bert's example of making a fat sandwich of mush inside a folded slice of well-buttered bread.
"Eat properly," Ruby said, harrowing the stuff on her own plate.
"Well?"
said Douglas.
Do you want the position?"
"It depends on Frank, doesn't it?" Ruby said. Across the room, Bert's grease-logged sandwich had collapsed, blobbing down his shirt front, and he was wiping it up with his fingers.
"What does he say?"
Ruby hoped she didn't sound desperate.
"He said as long as you leave him to himself and don't interfere, and if you think you can put Vi off, he'll consider it."
Was he teasing her? Dragging it out? He must have seen her expression.
"I'm pretty sure it's affirmative," he said. "What about you?"
Edie had stopped eating and waited with her fork vertical, waiting for a verdict.
"Don't hold your fork like that," Ruby said. "That's bad manners."
Douglas drummed his fingertips on the table. There were a lot of things Ruby wanted to say. She should have questions. Instead, she said,
"If Frank says so."
"Is that a yes? You'll move in?"
"Yes."
"Capital."
He slapped his palm on the table and grinned.
"When?"
"Up to you, as far as I know."
Douglas lowered his voice.
"Frank thinks you'll be the bulldog that'll keep Vi out of his hair."
Ruby laughed.
"What?"
"Bulldog,"
Edie said.
"Never mind flapping your ears when grown-ups are talking," said Ruby. Douglas chuckled.
"He's quite taken with you, and Tinkerbell."
"Me?"
Edie grinned. "Not that Tinkerbell would wipe her face on the back of her hand like that," said Ruby. "Go and see if there's a serviette somewhere." Edie gave a huff as she left the table and reappeared moments later, wiping her face with a grubby tea towel from the kitchen.
There aren't any serviettes.
Ruby gasped. Take that cloth back at once. By the time Edie returned with a plate of bread and jam, it had been decided. Ruby and Edie would leave Arcadia.
Good night, chicken, Ruby whispered, and she kissed Edie twice.
Mum?
Edie's voice was so small.
I wish I didn't have to go to sleep.
Well, you have to. Now shut your eyes.
But, Mum, when I'm nearly asleep, I don't know where I am. Sometimes it's worse when I wake up. It's just like that time when I got lost and didn't know where I was, and you couldn't find me.
When you wandered off while we were shopping at Three Lamps, you were only small then, and you weren't really lost.
It was horrible.
No use thinking about that now. Just go to sleep. Ruby knew perfectly well what Edie meant. Still, it was no use encouraging her to dwell on things. For some people, life was filled with one disruption after another. There were transit camps all over the country full of children wondering where they were. Edie had to learn to get on with it.
Stay with me.
Edie wriggled sideways to make room for Ruby to lie on top of the bedclothes next to her.
Mum, will my friends at my old school remember me?
How could they forget you, chicken?
I don't know.
Edie looked away and her voice dropped.
They might. Mum, do you remember Auntie Topsy at you know where?
Ruby stopped stroking Edie's hair. I don't know. You had so many aunties. She remembered all right. Sad Topsy, who doted on little Edie.
Well, I remember her, said Edie. Topsy read me stories at bedtime, when you went to work.
I read you stories when I could. Ruby stood and tucked Edie's bedclothes around her again.
I wonder, where did Topsy go?
Who knows? Ruby knew. Early one morning, after a long night, Ruby and another girl found Topsy dead on the kitchen floor, her head in the gas oven. Anyway, that's all in the past now. We've got a whole new future to look forward to. Ruby turned, suddenly irritated. None of that needed to be brought up now. It should stay buried. She made for the door. We're not talking about that place ever again. It's time to go to sleep.
Please don't go, Mum. I won't talk about it again, I promise. Please stay.
Ruby slumped on the edge of the bed, trying to quell the impulse to leave. Run. Leave Edie, the lot, everything. She forced herself to smile. Edie stared back at her over the pulled-up sheet. It won't always be like this. You know how Mrs. Thompson said we have to go? Well, we're leaving.
Are we going to Mr. Wood's friend's place?
Edie tried to sit up.
I knew it!
We might. Ruby pulled off her clothes and slipped under the covers with Edie.
When? Will he let us stay? Or is it just for a little while?
We'll see.
Oh, don't! Don't say we'll see, Mum. Please say yes.
Ruby wrapped Edie in her arms. Douglas and Frank and I have to finish discussing it.
So we might not.
Oh, I think we will. Just not yet. It was not long before Edie drifted off to sleep. With the warmth of Edie's limp, bony body seeping into her, Ruby should have been able to sleep. But sleep was teasing her, leading her into blankness, then releasing her to snap back to her thoughts. The lumpy mattress didn't help. At least the beds didn't sag. Eventually she gave up and went to the other bed, where she could toss about. Frank was an interesting chap. It was easy to see through him. He was a man made of glass wearing a thin veneer of bonhomie. That cheery overacting didn't hide the frustration of his pain, his anger at what he'd lost, his not being able. More difficult to understand was what caused him to loathe himself as he seemed to, as she loathed herself. For her sins? Sins committed when she couldn't help it? Sins committed deliberately? Sins of omission? And commonplace little sins she hadn't even noticed at all? Soon, she stopped noticing any of it.
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.